Hello and welcome to We'll Fix It in Post.
What's up?
I'm Howard Hahn. I'm here with my co-host,
Nevin Densham.
And joining us in the third chair seat, the esteemed Mr. Jonah Kleinbell. He's got his hand up right now.
Yeah, he's waving
to the audience.
Waving to the audience.
Forgetting that we're on the Magic Radio, but there he is.
What?
Jonah Kleinbell, how are you doing today?
I'm doing all right.
Yeah?
Yeah. Just dropped my car off at the shop. Got a cheap bowl of rental.
That's exciting.
Prize, yeah. Hopefully, if I don't die in the next 2 days from this Hyundai.
Uh-huh.
Hyundai ain't no shit, man.
No, that's a poo-poo garbage car.
Hyundai's just fine. Yeah. 10-year warranty, man.
Even Koreans are ashamed to drive that car.
Well, Koreans only want fancy cars anyway.
Like, Koreans in Korea are ashamed to drive that car.
Yeah, well.
I guess we don't have a choice.
They have some good Hyundais, though.
I've driven
in Korea.
12 miles the on so far without dying, so. So good. Far, so good.
Does it have, like, a tape deck?
No, it doesn't it actually has plugs for the iPod. And
yeah, a lot of rental cars have those these days.
It's kind of crazy.
Can't knock the Honda.
It has a USB port on it, too.
I inevitably, whenever I go, like, on a trip, I always forget, like, my cable that'll connect to one of those cars, like, the audio adapter, so I inevitably end up going to Target to buy one and then returning it on my way back to the airport.
Just, like, renting?
Basically, I mean, I have one at home. I'm just an idiot and never bring it with me. And were I to keep every single one I bought, I'd have like a dozen now.
You should put them in your bag.
Yeah, no, I really should.
Because you don't need it here.
Right.
You need it when you go places.
Yeah, it's just the bag I use always changes. Sometimes like it's in the bag from my last trip.
All right.
I'm like, oh, well, that was useful. Good job, Howard Hahn. Mm-hmm. You're an idiot.
You should be like me and have one bag. One bag per computer.
Your green backpack.
And then my green backpack, which is the best purchase I've ever made. Probably. $50.
Ever made?
Quite possibly, dude. That backpack is just exemplary. $50 backpack. I could not believe I was paying $50 for a backpack when I bought it. I thought, this is stupid. It was $19.99. And that should have gone.
That's like, a backpack
that's like,
an
that's like $200 in 2011 money.
Yeah. That's like a lot of money. Anyway, it's fantastic.
What makes it incredible?
It's comfortable. It's really adjustable. It's huge, surprisingly huge.
It's got this big pocket.
It's got a
where
big
you
pocket
can put in a bunch
center.
Of stuff.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound a whole lot different than a lot of backpacks.
It's just really good. I don't know.
It's got two straps.
What makes your Kia not as good
does
as?
Does it even have one of those?
It's got the handle
on top.
Yeah, hell yeah, dude. Not even kidding.
Wow. Does it have like a zipper pocket?
Yeah. Uh-huh. And it's got side zipper pockets that are just small enough to never be used.
That sounds like a disadvantage.
Well, you could always hide something in there. But I don't.
It's got two superfluous pockets. They don't really serve purpose, but I feel like it adds value.
But it's one of the best things I've ever bought.
It's just perhaps the thing I'm most satisfied with that I've ever paid money
for. The fact that those
for.
Things are there makes me happy.
Yeah.
It doesn't really help
my
or
satisfaction
hurt in any particular way.
With that backpack is very, very high.
All right. Well, that's good.
I mean, I've never even washed that thing.
That's gross.
It still smells good.
I don't believe you.
We should get it. Make you smell it.
Nope, not going to smell your backpack. You stay seated right there. Keep drinking your coffee, Mr. Café du Monde. All right, well, Nevin, let's move from your reviews of backpacks to let's get Nevin's movie reviews. Because you've seen two of the early summer blockbusters this season. You saw Thor, and you saw Fast and Furious.
Yeah.
So let's start with Fast and Furious.
It's okay.
Tell us your thoughts.
It's okay.
A little bit more detail would be great.
I mean, it's for a Fast and Furious movie, it's slow.
Uh-huh.
And it's character driven, but the characters are really bad. There's a lot of laughable moments.
is there a lot of
latent
homoeroticism between Vin Diesel and Paul Walker?
I don't think so. They really did away with that. There didn't seem to be much of that going on.
Because what I really want, I want moments where they're looking at each other and you can't tell if they want to hit each other or make out.
I don't think there's any moments like that. Vin Diesel has those moments with The Rock now.
Oh, that's kind of better.
Okay, great, great.
Yeah, that's kind of an upgrade for me, I'll be honest
with
you.
All right. But The Rock steals the movie.
Yeah.
Of course he does. It's an action movie, and he doesn't have to have anything more than just punching of people.
And his awesome goatee.
Sure, yeah.
And as we learned from Dodgeball, facial hair equals power.
It does, yep. Asian guy gets the girl.
Fucking beardo.
Asian guy gets the Israeli girl.
Oh, awesome.
Who's just there, apparently, to be the Asian guy's like victory condition.
That's even better. It's unfortunate that we know that he dies, but that's okay.
We know that the Asian guy dies?
Well, yeah, because chronologically, this takes place before Tokyo Drift.
No.
Yeah.
Really?
Tokyo Drift is the last movie in the series, chronologically.
Are you... When did... What? That's so weird.
Yeah. Well, they did it, so I think they... So the order goes, the Fast and the Furious, Too Fast, Too Furious.
Okay.
Fast and Furious, Fast Five.
Okay.
Then Fast and Furious, Tokyo Drift.
Okay, why?
I think mostly because Justin Lin wanted to bring back the Asian guy, and he was dead in the Tokyo Drift.
Uh-huh.
And so in order to do that, he had to set it before Tokyo Drift.
But it's been years since Tokyo Drift.
Yeah. Listen.
So did Tokyo Drift take place in the future? Like 2020?
It's Japan. It could be the future. It could be the past. You don't know. All right. That place is crazy.
All right. Has he actually spoken about this and said that that is what he's doing? Or does he just say he didn't, basically he didn't die?
No, he's like very much dead in Tokyo Drift. I think they have like a funeral. Like you see his body. I think he gets shot. I don't remember. I just remember being very upset.
Okay.
In the drinking. You know.
Anyway.
Yeah. John, do you watch Fast and Furious movies?
I've seen some of them. I didn't see this one, though.
How do you feel about the franchise? Are you excited about Fast Five?
I'd go see it. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be expecting to be, like, awed by the storyline or anything like that, but, you know.
You won't be.
Yeah.
There's some good shit. There's good shit.
Expect to see some, like, cars that don't look realistic.
Well, they all look
very
realistic.
Unrealistic stuff.
That definitely happens.
In Fast and Furious, they made a shift from like import cars to American muscle cars. Does that trend continue in this one?
There's everything.
That's awesome.
There's American supercar. I mean, I honestly can't tell that much because I don't know a lot about cars. Not like tanks.
Are there
if
cars?
It was, holy shit! Fast and Furious with tanks.
Are there cars that look like they belong in Westminster?
No. Yeah. Kinda. There are rice rockety cars,
yeah,
and then there's American muscly cars. Uh-huh. And yeah, I guess.
Do maybe. Any of the cars use alien technology?
Far as I know.
Are there awesome explosions?
Yeah.
How many explosions would you say off the top of your head?
More than 12.
Oh, that's awesome. I know that...
Wait, is it 12 explosions that people have to run away from?
I honestly don't know. That I can't tell you. But there's definitely a lot of shit that... I mean, do you count... I think there's a lot more car wrecking. There's a lot less fireball and a lot more car wrecking. There's an entire sequence where he's just on a freeway.
And then just the car spontaneously combusts?
No, not at all. They just... Something is being done with his car to make all of the other cars in the freeway crash. Like, he murders. They murder
Who's he?
Somebody in the movie. Somebody in the movie...
I know you're trying not to spoil it for me because I'm going to see it tomorrow. Because I've been waiting for Cristante to get back so we can go see this movie.
Just understand that there is some main character in the movie, and since they're all main characters,
yes.
There you go. Filming this movie drives a car really fast on a freeway, and everybody around him dies. They must die. They don't show them dying, but the
is
way
this,
that these
is
cars
this how, like,
are destroyed.
You think that the movie should have ended at the beginning because they drive a car off a cliff?
Basically, they all. They drive a car off the cliff, and then they fall hundreds of feet.
Do they land in water?
Into placid water.
Oh, yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, you know what happens when you land in... You hit water and,
movies have taught me that.
Velocity.
Movies have taught me that if you land in water, no matter what, you're always fine.
I don't want to be the... I don't even know how the stuntman did it, because I'm...
Maybe they just threw, like... Some dummies in.
Some ragdolls.
They threw some dummies in, and then they CGI'd in a guy flailing.
It's an amazing scene, and I was like, oh, when is the parachute going to open, or the hang glider pop out, or
it's like that scene from the other guys.
Sure, yeah. You know what? It's a lot like that scene, only over water.
They don't die.
Yeah, they don't die. They're literally like the next day, they're cool. They're not even like worse for the wear.
So what you're saying is this scene, like, it's kind of like that Burnout game?
Yeah, actually, because they caused enough destruction beforehand, they won the challenge.
They earned an extra life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, anyway. All right. You know, it was entertaining.
Okay, so, Nevin, I think the rating scale we're going to use for Nevin's movie reviews.
All right.
We're going to do...
How many tanks?
Going to theater.
Oh.
Okay, you know, today's rating scale, we'll do tanks.
Yes.
All right.
3 out of 5 tanks.
Three out of five tanks.
Three out of five tanks.
All right, that's good. That's good. All right, so next movie that you saw recently.
If they'd actually had an armored vehicle, it would get an automatic tank.
You know they're already shooting a sixth one.
Yeah, I know. Because they make it very clear at the end of the movie that there's going to be more.
And Asian guy is obviously still alive, yep. So I'm excited about this.
Yep, Asian guy and his hottest, not Australian, Israeli girlfriend.
All right, awesome.
Who, no, for no reason, is in the story.
She's going to leave him, though. I know this because I know his future, and it's sad.
You know his future? He's going to die?
He's going to die.
In Japan?
He's going to die in Japan. He's going to die alone in Japan. All right, so what about Marvel's next superhero franchise that they're planning?
Thor.
Thor. How'd you like that?
I surprisingly liked it a lot, and it's not just because Ash and Zach wrote it.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of their writing.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm not, like, they're
we
not
love
canon.
You.
No, I mean, they're not, like my, I'm not going to watch anything they write, like, amazing!
Yeah.
But it's really, really good. I'm not a fanboy, but it's, I mean, like, it's a really good movie. It's wonderfully well constructed. It's incredibly, incredibly tight.
Uh-huh.
And it's, unlike Fast Five, which is really long, like, you get to a point that it's an action movie, and uh-huh. at a certain point you're like, man, this is long and boring. Just fucking wrap it up. Get us to the end. And Thor, you never have a moment of downtime.
Okay.
It's really well performed and shot, and the characters are oddly compelling, and it's cool.
All right, well, give us a, and feel free to be as spoilerific as you want. Give us a synopsis.
Really?
Yeah.
A synopsis of Thor.
And if you don't, if you're listening to the show, if you're listening to the show and you haven't seen Thor yet, jump ahead for like 5 minutes or something.
So anyway, in Thor, they are telling two stories simultaneous, and then they meet up at some point. So you start off with what's her name, Star Wars Princess Number Two,
Jane Foster.
No, what's her name?
That's the character's name. The actress is Natalie Portman.
Natalie Portman. So it's Natalie Portman driving a truck with some dude and some other chick, and they're, you know, checking out this great event in the sky, and now this guy comes a god, and it's fucking Thor, and they hit him with their truck, and they're like, oh my god.
And wait, they hit a god with their truck?
Yeah, he looks like a guy. He looks like an Australian.
Does he have
He's got his shirt off, but he's clearly Australian. long blonde hair, accent.
Does he have a knife?
No, not yet.
That's not a knife.
No, he's got a hammer, but he doesn't know what happened to his hammer, because it's been taken from him. And then you flash back to, like, his time in the godlands, and his daddy is really upset at these alien creatures, and he's trying to teach his sons to like, learn that peace is really important, and he's got the impulsive young Thor, who's a dick, and the stronger of the two, and then the Loki, who's a trickster and weird. He's just weird. It's a little weird, but very caring for a weird guy. And then they go and raid the aliens and attack them. And
are they aliens or are they frost giants?
Frost giants. And they fuck their fucking shit up, but then they're all going to die. And Daddy comes and saves them. And Daddy's like, you guys suck. I'm gonna punish you, Thor, because you clearly are not ready to be king. And then he takes his hammer away and throws it to Earth. And the story takes place after that. And so my girlfriend's texting me. Anyway, I mean, it's not really worth going through all the details. Thor learns humility and patience and self-sacrifice and becomes a hero. And pretty girl falls in love with him. And snotty girl thinks it's really funny. And doctor guy who's in charge with them is going to go on to the sequels. And is also... Anyway, Thor has a problem with his brother. And Thor, like, reconciles a little bit. He has to go back and kick the shit out of him a lot. And all his minions. But he does. Because his brother looks like he's going to kill his daddy. And blah, 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 blah. He's on the Frost Giants into their plane. And then he stops them.
I feel like I just watched the movie.
Yeah. It's I
didn't sound like he really like faced a lot of resistance.
Oh, he faced a shit ton of resistance. They took away his hammer and he can't do shit when you take away his hammer. He becomes a comedian. When you take away his hammer, he's just really funny. Because he keeps thinking he can do things and he can't. Or he keeps thinking he's going to get his hammer back.
Did he ever get his hammer back?
Yeah, because he learned like to be worthy of it.
Does he say it's hammer time?
No, he doesn't. He actually willfully sacrifices himself, and that's when he becomes a hero.
Does he use like faux Shakespearean language like Thor in the comics?
A little bit. Yeah. When he becomes like, I'm now the hero, and he's got a hammer. Yeah, fuck yeah.
Once he suits up as Thor?
Yeah, well, he suited up as Thor, and then they took it away,
right.
And become Australian. Right. And then at the very end, when he's been smashed to fucking shit by the giant robot,
the Destroyer,
he dies, and then he, of course, reborn, because the hammer's like, now you're ready, and the hammer comes over, and his dead body grabs it.
Because he has to be worthy.
Only he's worthy.
Can hold the hammer, Thor.
And then, you know, he gets his armor back, and he flies, and he kicks the shit out of the Destroyer. And
he doesn't actually fly so much as he throws a hammer and carries him.
That.
I'm just saying. Just
that thing.
Technically speaking.
He does reference that he flies. He does, in fact, say in the movie, I'm just going to fly out of there. And he doesn't because he's not yet ready. Yeah. So there's a lot of like setup for the next movie.
It's flight, so, but it's not self-propelled.
He says so, what I'm saying. He calls it flight.
The hammer. He's got to have some really strong.
He has a lot of this shit.
There's a wrist strap. Wrist motion. There's a wrist strap on the hammer, and then he can twirl it, and then if he throws it, it carries him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's magic.
The hammer is kind of awesome. Yeah. Like I gotta say, the hammer is awesome. Who would have thought? Tiny little hammer. Awesome. Was not awesome to me in any other moment until I actually saw it in action, and then it's cool.
How does it stop you from crash landing, though?
You're God. You're like, no.
Just lands. Just magic. Whatever. You can also, like, twirl it and kind of float.
Like a helicopter?
Yeah, like a helicopter.
It's just magic. Don't even... Yeah. They explain it elegantly, where you go, you know how you call magic? We call science magic, basically. Hey! Ta-da! It's magical science. We can explain everything in that phrase. And it's done. And then shit happens. And they fly on their rainbow. Actually make jokes about the rainbow bridge they're flying on.
Well, they changed the god that's in charge of the rainbow bridge.
It's black guy.
Yeah, it's the black guy.
Who's awesome. It's awesome.
Yeah, which led to a lot of, like,
bigots getting
neo-Nazis angry. Getting really upset because they have a lot of affinity for, like, Norse mythology.
Yeah. Lol, Pone.
Yeah.
Guess what? That guy is actually the most powerful guy in the entire universe.
Idris Elba?
Yeah, because he can see anything, anywhere, any moment.
Yeah, but Heimdall gets his ass kicked a lot.
Only because he's bound by an oath. It's a great movie. It's a surprisingly good movie. It's really well constructed.
Look, Keith and I did note when that casting came out that it's kind of fucked up that they made the bouncer of Asgard a black guy.
Sure. And not the king.
I'm just saying, they're like... We need, like...
James Earl Jones.
Heimdall is basically the bouncer of the gods. Let's cast a black guy.
Sure.
He's the guy at the door. He's like, you gotta get past him to get in.
It's true.
Yeah.
James Earl Jones as Thor would be...
Not as Thor, as his dad.
As Odin?
As Odin. Why not?
Anthony Hopkins was good casting,
I thought. He's great. Yeah, for what he does, he doesn't do a lot.
He looks regal and has one eye.
He basically looks regal and has one eye. And then, you know, berates his child.
Yeah.
And then admits to his other child that you're actually not a human or whatever we are. You're a frost giant. And for some reason, Loki never before noticed that he was blue or something. Like, I don't know why. I don't know why the fucking... If you're blue...
Wait, so Loki's a frost giant?
Yeah,
and the other
he's
guy
a child.
Is
not, yeah, he's a child of the frost giants. He's not blue, like, normally.
So that's why he's evil?
Well, that's why he's now has doubts about who he is and who he should be.
But he's, like, the main antagonist in the
movie.
Yeah.
So what are his powers?
Magic.
He has
tricking.
Yeah.
Tricking of things.
Thor has always been like his characteristics is that he's like a physical character, right? His solution to things is like hit it with a hammer.
He's like the warrior in Gauntlet,
right? And then Loki uses like magics and tricks and things like that to get his ways.
Okay.
Yeah. And Loki is a bad guy. Ultimately.
Yeah.
The next movie is going to be all about something that they set up in the end of this movie, which I don't understand.
So we'll tell us what happens at the end, and then we'll try to...
Thor wins.
Uh-huh.
Thor smashes the rainbow bridge to the other realms. Dad saves Thor, who's saving Loki, as they fall off the bridge.
Uh-huh.
And then Loki's like, Dad, I did it all for you. And Dad's like, you're not my son, basically, paraphrasing. Now, he doesn't actually say that, but he's like, you were bad. And Loki's like, I can't live with that. And then he lets go, and he falls into the universe. And of course, at the very end of the movie... Loki is impersonating the scientist guy inside of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Uh-huh.
He's being invited by dude who's the guy who's the Men in Black dude. I don't know the characters. Men in Black dude invites Dr. Guy to go look at Cube.
The Cosmic Cube.
Sure. And he's like, this cube is going to be awesome. And the doctor's like, I bet it would be. And then you see in the mirror, it's Loki who's actually impersonating me. Like, sequel.
Well, that's actually, they're using that to set up for the Avengers.
Yeah.
Sure. Not the Thor sequel.
Okay. Well, they're all sequels.
So Thor is part of the Avengers?
Yes, Thor is part of the Avengers. The core three members of the Avengers are Captain America, Iron Man, and Thor. Mm. And so that's what they're angling towards.
So are they going to have like all the people from like the movies?
Yeah, yeah. They're all going to be in the Avengers.
Wow, so Robert Downey Jr. is going to be in that?
Yep.
That should be dope.
I wonder, I mean, the sheer amount of money those actors could just rip from the studio.
Yeah.
So you got this franchise you're trying to build that involves all of our franchises.
Right.
Strike.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure that when they made those deals, they had to structure them in some sort of smart manner. But,
I wonder.
I mean, but think, like, there's never really been anything like that in cinema before.
It's a groundbreaking moment.
Yeah. It's like these three independent sequence, like, series. Actually, four, because they're going to bring the Hulk as well.
Isn't it Captain America?
Yeah.
Captain America, Thor, Iron Man, Hulk.
Right.
And there's nobody else who's going to
join the party? There's other members of the Avengers, but I don't think the Ant-Man movie is going to be out by then. So Ant-Man technically would be on the Avengers.
Wait, Ant-Man's going to have a movie?
Yeah. The guy
who's Ant-Man? I've never even heard of Ant-Man.
Ant-Man is Hank Pym. He created this gas out of this thing called Pym Particles, which named after him, that allows him to shrink down to ant size.
So he's a little dude.
Yeah, and then and he has a helmet that lets him talk to ants. And then his fiance...
For no good reason other than to explain.
That's a pretty weak superpower. Ant-Man.
And then his
fiance... Definitely carry off some picnic baskets.
Yep. Right. His fiance is the Wasp, Jen Van Dyne. And she can also shrink, but when she shrinks, she grows like these little wasp wings. And she can shoot bioelectric stings, like little lasers at people from her hands. And then at some point, Ant-Man started getting a complex because... Like you said, his superpower is kind of lame compared to, like, I'm Iron Man. Yeah, like, yeah, I'm Captain America. I'm a living god. So he altered his formula to change it from making him small to making him big. So then he became Giant Man. Then there was a period of time where he made an alternate costume called, where he was Yellow Jacket, where he went back to his shrinking formula and built a suit that had, like, fake wings, like his wife, and could also shoot, like, the bioelectric stings. Then he kind of lost his mind and became the first spousal abuser in comics. There's a really, really famous issue where, like, he beats the shit out of the Wasp.
Wow.
Because he's feeling really shitty about himself as a superhero. And she's not making him feel very good either. So he just gives her, like, five across the eye.
God damn.
And then he works with a supervillain to, like, make this robot that'll attack the Avengers and, like, kind of beat the shit out of everybody. Like, it has countermeasures for everyone, like, but him. And so he's going to swoop in and save the day, and everyone will be like, oh, Yellow Jacket, you're the best hero ever. But, of course, like, the villain, like, fucks him over, and, like, eventually the Avengers have to team up and beat up the robot. So they're like, well, between hitting your wife and accidentally almost killing all of us, we're kicking you out of the Avengers.
And you have a lame superpower.
Yeah, but then they kind of attribute that to, like, him having a nervous breakdown. So then later he becomes one of the founding members of the West Coast Avengers. Because for a while there were a lot of superheroes that are based, like, out of California. Like, Iron Man moved out here and stuff. So, and on the West Coast Avengers, he was just, like, Dr. Pym. So he just had, like, this, like, red jumpsuit. But what he would do is he would use his shrinking formula and, like, all kinds of cool gadgets and stuff. So, like, he'd pull out, like, a, you know, something inside of a cell phone in his pocket and activate his formula, and it would, like, turn into a jet. Or, like a handful of marbles would turn into, like, a gun and a shield and stuff. So that was, like, moderately more useful.
Hmm.
Then, at some point, he gets kidnapped. Okay, so this is wow. This is all very convoluted.
This is the most important character in the Avengers.
Yeah. So, at some point, Marvel Comics had this crossover called Secret Invasion. Okay, there are these race of aliens in Marvel Comics called the Skrulls, and they're these alien shapeshifters. Okay, and so they kind of had encounters with various Marvel characters over the years. The first appearance was in Fantastic Four, I want to say number.
Wait, Fantastic Four is also part of this world?
Yeah, Fantastic Four is, but Fantastic Four will not get involved in the Marvel universe because any of the properties that are currently being like licensed by Fox.
Mm-hmm.
So Fantastic Four, X-Men. I think that's it. Those two brands can't get hooked up with, like, the Marvel Universe
unless
regular.
Unless the studios...
Oh, and Spider-Man, because Sony's hooked up with that.
Unless the studios want to.
Right,
A grand bargain.
Right, but that's never going to happen. And so the reason they're actually rebooting the Fantastic Four franchise is that Fox has, and same thing with Spider-Man, they have up until, like, X date to, like, exercise their right to the license, or else it reverts back to Marvel.
Yeah.
But... They're, you know, the reason they rebooted is they're looking at the cost of, like, just maintaining the same Spider-Man cast. And they're mm-hmm. like, well, we don't know if we'll get the same return after the train wreck that was Spider-Man 3, so.
But, which was the most amazing train wreck. The fact that they fucking made $1 billion on that movie?
Yeah, it's amazing. With emo Spider-Man and spider dancing.
In the, that,
was it
the
really bad? I never saw that one.
There's a wonderful moment.
I gave up on the after seeing the second one.
Oh, second one was awesome.
Second one's pretty good. But yeah. There's a wonderful moment in the third one where he becomes the amazing asshole Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Where he gets very angry.
He's emo Spider-Man. He dyes his hair black. He kind of has it, like, over his eye like he was in, like, I don't know, like a Fallout Boy or some shit.
It's the movie that... What's his name? Clearly wanted to make
Sam Raimi.
Sam Raimi clearly wanted to make. Either that. It was like a big fuck you to the studio, or it was like this is the real movie he wanted to make about Spider-Man. Because you can see that shit could easily transfer to like Broadway.
Yeah.
I could see that being Broadway. He goes around dancing and singing and pointing at girls being like, "Hey." And then the girls are like, "Ooh."
But and like, but like, and that's just his to his perception. Like he'll be like, "Hey." And then the girls are like, "Ah." And then like he'll walk by
and they're like,
and then you'll
the
see
fuck?
In the background they're like, "That guy's fucking gross." Like,
oh, okay. Okay. So he's just, like demented
kind yeah, of. A little bit. A little bit. Yeah.
It becomes weird.
Yeah, okay, so anyway, there are these creatures called the Skrulls. They debut in Fantastic Four. The Fantastic Four defeat them, but they don't want to kill them for some reason, I guess. So Reed Richards creates this machine that convinces the Skrulls that they're cows. Like, so they turn into cows.
On Earth?
Right, because they can shapeshift, so he turns them into cows, and they just, like, kind of leave them in a pasture.
So we've been eating,
well,
we've
yeah,
been
so,
eating Skrulls.
So that's
they're
what actually,
delicious.
They actually, there's a comic that was in, like, the mid-90s called Skrull Kill Crew that picked up on that, and the premise was these Skrulls, like all cows, eventually become processed into beef, and people that have eaten, like, the tainted hamburgers or whatever made from these cows end up getting little bits of Skrull DNA, like, implanted inside of them.
Okay.
Right? And the advantage is, when you have that, you can, like, you have different people have, like, different shape-shifting powers. Like, some guys can, like, only change their hands or whatever. And you also get the ability to see Skrulls. Like, they don't look like normal people to you.
Mm-hmm.
The downside is that it's a terminal condition, and eventually you're gonna die within a year, like, once your powers manifest.
Yay!
Mad cow.
Yeah, and so, basically, like, in this miniseries, the Skrull Kill Crew goes around, like, to different, like, areas where Skrulls have planted sleeper agents on Earth and, like, murder them. All right.
Okay.
So there's this miniseries called Secret Invasion that kind of takes that idea and amps it up. And the idea is that the Skrulls believe that there's a religious prophecy that says that Earth is going to be their new home because their old homeworld gets eaten by Galactus.
Cool.
And the Queen of the Skrulls has been like slowly planting agents in Earth for like the past like 20 years or whatever.
Okay.
And they've developed a process that allows them to like mimic superpowers because normally they can't do that. They can just, you know, mimic shape, right? But if they were Thor, for example, like they wouldn't be able to like summon lightning.
Okay.
Like that. But they create a process that allows them to do that.
So if they do that, why do any mimicry at all? Because now you can do whatever the fuck you want because you can just be, I'm a superpower god. Well,
right.
We'll just
well,
do 5,000 of those.
Right, but the problem is the process is very difficult. Like, they can't make as many as, like, it's not, like, an unlimited number of, like, superpowered agents, right? And also, there's, like, a million superheroes on Earth. Like, if you count, like, all the villains and the heroes, like, and I imagine if there's alien invasion, like, everyone's going to get up in their biz, right? Which is what ends up happening.
Okay.
But they've like been slowly replacing members of like the superhero community as well. Mm-hmm. So at some point, Ant-Man, or Giant-Man, gets kidnapped, gets swapped out with a Skrull.
He's a good target.
Huh?
He's a good target.
Yeah, because everyone. But the thing, like, he's really hooked up in the superhero world because he's one of the, like the preeminent superhero scientists, right? Really smart guy. So everyone ends up coming to him for advice. But he's also the kind of guy where like, if Captain America starts acting a little bit weird, people are going to notice. But if Ant-Man is like, he's a little bit off, you're like, you know, he beat his wife. Like, who knows?
Right.
So anyway, he's recently been reintegrated into Marvel Universe, and he's like, oh, my Skrull imposter had a baby with this cat lady. Anyway, this is
yay
comics.
All right.
So, but they're going to make a movie out of that? That's
I think, so the guy that did Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz is going to do it, and I think he's just going to focus, like, on his early career as Ant-Man, and kind of, it's going to be, like, kind of like a superhero comedy.
Okay.
Like, oh, you're Ant-Man. That fucking sucks.
That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, there's also a brief series called The Irredeemable Ant-Man, where it was about this guy that's like kind of like a shady con man, like a washout S.H.I.E.L.D. agent that gets a hold of this Ant-Man costume that gives him all the Ant-Man powers, but all he does with it is like peep on girls' showers and like...
That is exactly what you would do with that skill. No one will ever know.
Yeah, like he'll like wait for like a superhero to beat up like a villain and then like... Like, a superhero will leave, and, like, right before the cops show up, like, he'll grow up. He'll be like, that was me! Like, I'm the guy that beat the shit out of this guy! Like, aren't I awesome? Like, come have sex with me, superhero groupie! Like, so, I don't know. Maybe they'll go with that angle on Ant-Man. So,
that's great.
Thor, sequel. Would you want to go see it?
A sequel?
Yeah. Like an actual Thor sequel rather than Avengers.
Possibly. Yeah. I'm not, like... I'm never excited about comic movies.
What if the Thor sequel...
Joanna gets excited about comic movies.
What if
get me in
the Thor sequel had Space Horse in it?
Well, I don't know what that
Space
means.
Space Horse.
Don't know what that means.
Okay. So...
Oh, God.
Tell you a little bit more about comic books. In Thor...
Okay.
There was this character named Beta Ray Bill, who is basically a space horse.
Yep.
And he... There's an issue where Thor fights him. And
wait, fights a horse?
Well, it's like a horseman. Yeah, he looks like a man, but he has like a human stature, but has like a horse face. He fights Space Horse, At some point in the fight, loses his hammer. Like, it falls out of his hands. And Space Horse somehow picks it up, and it teleports him to Asgard. So Thor is left on Earth as, like, a normal human without any of his powers.
Okay.
And
happens
then,
a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a common. He also gets turned into a frog during this run. But anyway, eventually, Odin realizes that Space Horse was able to pick up the hammer because he is actually worthy. He's an honest, noble person. So Odin makes him his own hammer called Stormbringer.
And so now there is a horse with the power of Thor.
Yeah, there's two Thors. There's Thor and Beta Ray Bill.
How did he get a second hammer?
Odin makes it using the power of the Allfather.
I thought Odin...
The Odin source.
I only had one, like, sun center thing.
So Odin can just pick another one.
Okay.
He's the creator of all things. All
right.
Anyway, Space Horse is awesome, and I hope he's in the sequel.
Okay.
Space Horse.
Probably. I don't think America's ready for that. I think they were ready for an Australian with a giant hammer.
Like, imagine.
I don't think they were ready for a horse.
Imagine if it was like Thor 2 Electric Boogaloo, and like as you start scrolling up, you see Thor's costume, like scrolling. Then all of a sudden at the top, Space Horse. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Space Horse should just have his own franchise.
I agree. Battery Bill should absolutely have his own franchise. He's awesome.
As a comedy.
Hold on. Give me a second.
You gotta go get this.
I can get Space Horse.
Oh my god. Do you have a toy? Oh. Well. So what else is new, John?
dodgeball. Oh, that is.
It doesn't look like a horse to me.
It looks like a lizard.
That doesn't look like a horse.
Lizard man.
Whatever. He's
and he looks
horse.
Just like Thor.
Yeah. See, but his hammer's a little bit different.
He actually steals.
Well, this is
Thor's
this
entire
is,
motif.
This is Stormbringer. It's his own hammer.
No, he's wearing Thor's clothing.
Oh, yeah, because that's what you get when you put on the... When you pick up the hammer, Thor, you get the outfit of Thor. It's
like a package deal. That doesn't really look like a horse at all.
I hate both of you. Space horse.
Yeah, it does. Looks more like a snake, if I got to go with
lizard-y,
anything.
Lizard-y, snake, Skeletor.
Or yeah, like a long Skeletor.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like a horse skull. No. Like imagine like a horse skull. That's what it looks like. It
looks way more like Skeletor grew a nose.
That's what horse skulls look like.
Skeletor. Horse.
All right.
Space horse.
Sure. Thanks.
Yeah, I'm less excited about the franchise.
I'm not. Yeah. Now I'm not so hot for it.
Whatever. I hate both of you. Space horse is gonna be amazing.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Well, let's talk about some video game stuff, Nevin. Let's talk about some stuff that's gonna get you excited. We watched the trailer for Modern Warfare 3. We also watched the trailer for Battlefield 3.
Yeah.
Talk to me about it, Nevin. Yay or nay?
Fuck Modern Warfare.
All right, well, let's talk to me about Modern Warfare 3 first.
You know, I will just perma-hate Modern Warfare until they put back dedicated servers and Lean.
I'm pretty sure they had dedicated servers and Lean in Black Ops.
Sorry, not... No, they didn't. No.
Yeah.
Well, I won't buy it anyway. They already punished. They already did it. Fuck them.
They're like, oh, if they only do these things that they've already done, then
now...
Wait, no, just kidding.
Nope.
Lied to you.
Fuck those guys anyway. I'm already out of the franchise. All right, I don't want to get back in.
Let's get John involved. John, tell us a little bit about that trailer for Modern Warfare 3. What are your impressions? As someone that has no emotional connection or investment in hating on this franchise, how did you feel about that?
I thought that for a trailer, it looked like they looked at... You were trying to use a lot of in-game footage, and I wasn't, like, terribly impressed because it wasn't, like... The trailer didn't have any, like, crazy cinematic qualities, and then, like... But you didn't get the feel for what the actual gameplay would be like, either. So it was hard for me to tell what the game would actually be like versus Battlefield 3. It looked like, you know, we watched a lot of, you know, the actual footage of the game. It looked pretty dope.
Are you excited at the prospect of going to fight in... United States and France and Germany and England and all these other Thringland. Any place where they can replace the letter E with a 3?
It just sounded like an asinine...
3PO-pia?
Yeah.
Sounded like it wasn't a realistic premise, you know, from what you guys were telling me at
exactly.
The storyline. Just didn't seem to make sense.
It's stupid. The second Modern Warfare is just plain stupid. This one... is going into... It's Red Dawn for the whole world. And you go...
Yeah, that's awesome.
How the fuck did Russia suddenly, in this future, become so capable it could invade Western Europe? And first, it starts by invading the United States.
Yeah.
It
well,
starts
obviously.
By invading the United States, which is patently absurd.
That's where they get the weapons to invade the rest of the world.
Well, maybe there's under the entire continent of Russia, there's like a sub-Russia.
A giant robot!
We don't even know about.
I gotta tell you, it's so ridiculous.
It's like that Simpsons episode. There's an episode of The Simpsons where Homer joins the Navy, and the sub ends up going like AWOL because he fucks it up, right? So there's like a nuclear sub that's just like randomly going around the ocean. And they're at the UN, and the ambassador from Russia says, the Soviet Union would gladly plan provide amnesty to your wayward vessel. And the U.S. ambassador's like, the Soviet Union? I thought you guys broke up. That's exactly what we wanted you to think. And he presses a button, and his like placard changes from Soviet Union to, or from Russia to Soviet Union. And they cut to like all these scenes in Russia. There's like a float of like happy, like a parade floats with like a bear and like stuff. They open up and soldiers start marching out. Like all these like warehouses open up, more soldiers come marching out. Like Lenin comes to life in his tomb. It's like, must crush capitalism. Maybe that's what, like, maybe it's set in the Simpsons universe.
Maybe. It's just so lame. So lame. Yeah. Anyway.
No.
I mean, no. I mean, the first one was so groundbreaking and told a great story, and the second one just went crazy. I mean, there is no world that there's no plausible way to get to the world where the Russians could actually invade the United States. It makes for great gameplay when you're at that level and you're like, wow, yeah, it's really cool that we're fighting in suburban D.C. But if you take a step back and you go, how the fuck did we get here? It just doesn't stand up. It's just kind of like throwing risque shit. It's not risque, but it's like the equivalent of throwing out risque shit to just create conflict. Right. Conflict.
So how did they get the resources? Did they explain it at all?
They didn't. They never did. They go, oh, Russia just fucking appears off the coast and invades.
Oh, like no total sneak.
It's like super sudden. Like there's no build up to it. It's not like you're chasing down like a hidden cache of Russian missiles or something.
And it's not like it's even. I'm trying to figure whatever. Tom Clancy did this in Hawks.
Oh yeah.
where it's Hawks is a video game where you fly around in an airplane and you shoot down other airplanes. But in Tom Clancy's Hawks, a similar thing occurs where you're a part of this Merc company that used to work for the United States, and now you go work for this company that's employed by the United States a lot for peacekeeping and nation state building. And then they decide that the United States is a commercial threat, so they use their now incredibly built up power to do a surprise attack in the United States. But they do shit like they jam the East Coast radar defenses, and they do a Pearl Harbor, basically, and attack all the aircraft on the ground, and then they invade by air, and you go, okay, it's ridiculous. But at least they make the pretense of how this occurs.
Kind of way to make this happen.
The Modern Warfare 2 is just like, nope, we're just going to... Executive decision, invasion of the United States.
Some kid's eating ice cream, and then the next thing, he's got a...
It's kind of like that.
Got a Russian with a rifle.
Yeah. So this one is only going to be like that, but worse. Because it's the Cold War turning hot 30 years later, and the West would just demolish the fucking shit out of Russia.
And apparently Russia has the power to not only invade the U.S., but also France.
Simultaneously,
Germany.
On three different... island areas. It's not like, put it this way, there's not like there's no American Navy. Because there's clearly no air power, no like incredibly large number of attack submarines that we have, or our Air Force.
We wouldn't launch any nukes either.
No, I'm
just
down
let
with
them invade us, you know?
I'm okay with conventional warfare conversations. I'm alright with that. But the way that you get troops to an island is you either airlift them or you take them over by sea. Both of which we'd probably see coming. Probably. Likely. And if
They don't have teleporters yet.
No. Anyway, it's ridiculous. They're stupid for even trying it. So fuck them. I hate them so much. But okay. Battlefield 3 looks amazing.
Well, John, tell us your impressions of Battlefield 3 based on that 12-minute trailer that we watched.
It looked pretty intense. Like, probably the best graphics of any first-person shooter I've ever seen. And it looked pretty realistic, too, from just the way that the soldiers were behaving. The language was very, like, you felt like you were actually in a you know, a platoon or whatever. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, the only thing that wasn't realistic about it, and it's still not realistic about any of these games, you get shot with a bullet, you're dead, you know?
Oh, I have a red mark.
Oh.
I'll heal.
Yeah, and there's this one guy in part of it where it goes like, he goes like, I'm kind of injured, but I'm like, you know, I'm not...
I can move.
And then he's just moving around like everybody else.
I mean,
so it's like,
in that context, so there's a sniper, right?
Yeah.
And they later explain the sniper is shooting a 50 caliber at them.
Yeah.
If you are a man and you get hit with a 50 caliber, it usually takes limbs off.
You're probably not going to be moving around
or,
too well.
Or it splits you in half.
Yeah, but they have... It's like 2014, so there's future armor.
There's no ballistic armor that could stop a 50 cal.
Maybe they're making it right now, Nevin, and we'll have it in 3 years.
Fair enough.
They have plasma shields.
Anyway, yeah. I got a problem with that, but other than that, everything else in that trailer was pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty good. Gameplay looks great, and I'm looking at going multiplayer. I don't care about their fucking story. I mean, it's kind of cool. They're going to set up in Iran with a giant earthquake, and it's going to be really scary, and bad shit's happening. Cool. Multiplayer.
So
it looks good.
I got a question for you. If you are so excited about the multiplayer, then why do you hate Modern Warfare 3 when you could just do multiplayer on Modern Warfare 3?
Here's why. I was going to ask that.
Why do question. I want... I don't want to play in a non-plausible place. It doesn't... It takes away from my essence of immersion. I like shooters that feel like simulations. And if you're going to drop me off in Paris, France, and have me fight World War III, and you got a really stupid reason, it takes away from everything else. And also, Modern Warfare, I know the gameplay. It's not going to be changed that much, and it's not as good as it used to be. Battlefield 3, I remember playing Battlefield 2, and it was, you know, it's okay, but I'm sure people will mod it, unlike Modern Warfare, which they seem to make a concerted effort to stop players from modding. And the best thing about Modern Warfare and Call of Duty 2 were that you could build your own servers that could have your own skins, your own maps, your own guns, all new shit. And so it was an engine that you could build on. And Battlefield 3 will more likely have that opportunity.
So is the issue that it's sci-fi based on reality? Like, for example, like that whole issue of immersion doesn't hit you with like Halo or Borderlands, for example.
Borderlands is an RPG, and I don't like Borderlands. If Borderlands played like fucking Darkest Hour played or Red Orchestra played, it would an RPG that fucking did hyper-realism combat would blow my mind. Make me so happy.
Right, but I'm just saying, like, you got really into Borderlands. Like, you played the shit out of that
game. I did.
Multiple characters, no less.
Well, the reason why is it's just a really well-made game. And right. Two, I had a group of friends, Eric and blanking on the other guy.
James,
and we would always play. So we actually had a really good unit to play with.
Uh-huh.
And to have it with voice communication and your buddies, it's fun. And all of your stats stack, and it's an interesting enough world. It's small enough to get to learn. I mean, there's all these things about it that were okay.
Yeah.
At the end of the day,
I'm just saying, like, the issue of immersion that you're having, it doesn't seem to be the same because it's like completely alien sci-fi.
That game makes no pretense to try to be a simulation of anything. Whereas Halo, my problem with Halo is, as much as it's a cool game, I still want a fucking plasma gun when you get a hit to kill you.
Uh-huh.
Or I just don't like the... This is supposed to be real. We're having a very, very serious conversation about the story world and all the things that are going on. And lots of people are dying around you. And yet you are this fucking impossible-to-kill robot that has health regen. Shields I'm okay with, but health regen...
You're a man. You're not a robot. You're a Spartan soldier.
Whatever. That done with realistic shit would really flip my mind. I like realism. I like a bullet. When you take a bullet, you die, or you lose your arm gets fucked up, or you get knocked to the ground, or... I don't know. That's why I play Red Orchestra variants still.
But you're so in suck it up for Battlefield 3, though.
I'll try it. I'll definitely try it out. And I remember Battlefield 2 was so much fun. Yeah. I loved Battlefield 2 and had a lot of flaws, but I still really, really liked it. And then Modern Warfare came out and did a much better version of the multiplayer experience.
Mm-hmm.
Super intense. But what you miss between the two is that Modern Warfare is all about infantry combat and Battlefield is all about multi-unit combat. So tanks, vehicles, Humvees, airplanes, helicopters, and infantry. And a much broader variety of weapons. And hopefully what they'll do is that you can pick your kit rather than having to pick your class.
Right.
Which is pretty cool.
I just hope you can still ride on the wings of jets.
I know it. That shit is so hilarious. I got it.
So the Battlefield series, John, it has, when you play multiplayer, it has like all these different vehicles. You can use like tanks, trucks, like airplanes and stuff. And it's like World War II traditionally. So they're set, you know, it's like prop planes, right? But in multi, like, you would get in a plane, and then you'd tell your, like, the rest of your unit to hop on the wings, and then you would fly away. But, like, there's no physics involved, so it's not like the draft, like, pulls them off. Like, you're just riding on top of this plane that's, like, flying around. As long as you keep it level, you're not going to fall off.
People are just sitting on the plane.
Yeah, people are just sitting on the wings of the plane.
Because there is no physics engine in that game. Yeah. So by now, I'd expect they have a physics engine.
Yeah.
Another thing I love about Red Orchestra, super realistic physics engine.
That's what they did with Battlefield Heroes, which was like they had a free-to-play online version of Battlefield. You play it through your web browser.
Hmm.
And for that, like, they actually made that a feature. Like, the character models would actually be seated on the plane, and, like, it was kind of part of the joke, because this was, like, a much more cartoony style, like, visually. All right, well, so...
Battlefield 3.
Battlefield 3, you're going to get it.
Looks really good.
Okay.
Looks really good.
Are you going to get it on Steam, or are you going to get it retail package?
I will almost surely get it on Steam. I don't buy games, unless they're electronic.
Okay. So let me use that to segue into our next story, which is the great PlayStation Network outage of 2011.
Yeah, right.
So, John, just to fill you in on what happened, this hacker group called Anonymous had engaged in a war with Sony. There was this one hacker named Geohots that had...
Geohots.
His name was like George...
Kind of don't like fuck with us. We're so...
His name was like George Hots or something like that. So he made it Geohots, right? He came up with this way to strip the DRM from Sony's PlayStation 3. And the idea was like, oh, now you can run like your own operating system on it and blah, 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 blah. But really, it's so that you can play stolen games. Like, let's just be honest about it.
Yeah.
All right? Let's be real about it. You're not doing it because you're really that desperate to run Linux on your PlayStation. Like, you're doing it because you fucking want to steal some games.
Quick segue. My cousin in England, who works for IBM as the internal tech support, he used to buy... He bought an Xbox, and when back in the day, you could do that.
Right.
It's like 19... I guess like 2002, 2004 maybe. He put Linux on it and made it just a dumping ground for all his movies and DVDs all the shit that was electronic that he owned, and then mirrored it to his TV. Back before we had like Apple TV like that, or computers that do that. And that was cool because he had a controller and all that, an operating system in it.
Right, but he wasn't also trying to like run Xbox games.
He wasn't stealing any games because he didn't even really want it for games. He just liked it was a really good system to run. It's a very good system, really cheap, good computer.
Yeah. I mean, but a PlayStation 3 is like $200-$300.
A cheap, good computer.
You could buy like an actual computer for that much. That would be much more suited towards the purpose that you want to use it for.
I don't know anymore. Probably. Pretty close.
Yeah. Close, so anyway.
Probably nothing as tightly engineered.
Right. So Sony basically sued this guy, and they're like, for releasing the secret out into the world. In the hacker community, because they're very much information should be free. That was just the stupidest credo in the world. But they decided that they were going to get back at Sony. So they started doing all these denial service attacks on the PlayStation Network, basically shutting it down so people couldn't play games on it or download movies or whatever. And then they stopped after a couple of days because they realized that people were getting mad at them. Because they're like, you know, the average gamer's like, I don't give a shit if you're mad at Sony. Like, I want to play Modern Warfare and you're fucking with my ability to do that.
Yeah.
So they're like, okay, we're sorry. We're not going to do it anymore. you know, we retract our anger. Then, coincidentally, a couple of days later, Sony shuts down its PlayStation Network itself, saying that, you know, we've had some sort of issues with it. We're shutting it down. You know, we'll fill you in as soon as we can.
Is it still shut down?
No, it just reactivated, but not all of it. so it turns out the reason they did that is that they found out they had a security breach. And basically, some people hacked in and took information. So it's like address, email, the password using for PlayStation Network, all this stuff.
Credit card, right?
For a lot of people, credit card information as well. For basically their entire user base, so like several million people.
Woo! It's the biggest information steal of all time.
Yeah, pretty much.
So far.
And so they recently just got everything back up and running, and so all kinds of stuff.
Why would anybody ever use Sony again?
Exactly.
Well,
Sony already sucked, and now.
I mean, the question is like, really, no one's information is that secure.
Sure.
Like, imagine if they had done it to Amazon. Like, how much worse it would be.
Yeah.
You know,
but I imagine Amazon is better prepared for that sort of thing.
The thing is, you can't. I mean, Sony had like the latest like software patch upgrades and all the security things that I assume that Amazon has as well. But whatever layer of security you have, there's a hacker out there where if they decide they want to fuck with you,
probably
that they can
a
get
large enough group can brute force.
Right. Yeah.
Probably. And the trick is, while they're doing it, you have to plug all the holes as it happens.
Right.
And I bet Amazon is much more dedicated to that kind
of
work.
I think everyone is much more dedicated to it now. I mean, because, you know, we're kind of like in a new frontier, you know? Like, this nothing of this scale has ever really happened before. You know, before when credit card databases have gotten stolen or whatever, it's someone was really sloppy with it, right? But this is like one of the few times where there's this huge cache of information, which is usable like on so many different fronts, like just identity theft.
Yep.
The credit card numbers aside, if someone has your name, your address, your email account, and a password that you use for whatever service, which...
Probably transferable
Which most people, you know, like the password you use for whatever, your PlayStation login, probably not that different from your email login, you know.
Most people, because people use variations on the same password or whatever, right? If you have all that stuff, it's really easy to steal someone's identity, which is like the bigger issue at stake.
Yeah.
But this is kind of like a grand new frontier for that, right? But the weird thing is that for most people, and even myself, despite like having like stayed fairly well read on this topic and staying up to date on it, it really hasn't changed any of my like online habits. I'm no less gun shy or no more gun shy about buying stuff online. Like, as soon as PlayStation Network was up again, I just changed my password and started using it again. Like,
I do really long passwords.
Yeah.
And then I will switch them
every
couple months. But it's just because I don't like the idea of someone getting in.
Yeah.
So far, I've never been hacked. But it's like, when I see people have that shit happen, I'm like, I really, really don't want that. Really, really don't.
Yeah. I've never had that issue either, but...
Yeah.
I mean, I've had my credit card stolen a couple of times, but...
Probably at a store.
Yeah, usually like
the teller at the store.
Yeah, or actually, both Lakeith and I don't buy clothing from Threadless anymore because both of us, like subsequent to a purchase there, had our credit card numbers jacked. So it could just be coincidence.
Really?
Yeah, but
damn. How did you know it was jacked? Like you started having like giant purchases on it?
Yeah, well, I mean, I check my online statement every day for my bank, just out of habit.
Jeez.
All
right. Well, that I don't do.
Yeah, I mean, just it helps me keep track of what I'm spending as well, but it's just like a thing. And then you have a link to show you like pending purchases, and then you log on, and all of a sudden there's like $100, $200 in stuff that you didn't authorize at stores you don't know, and so you call your credit card company and they cancel your card and blah 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 blah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, usually when they first steal it, there's two different types of like credit card theft criminals. There's ones where they steal it and then they'll just
immediately burn
as much as they can. Other ones will kind of like ping at it a little bit to see if it'll float, and then they'll kind of like drop one or two things in. Because imagine like you don't check your statement every day, right?
Nope.
But if like kind of over time, like once a month, maybe like $50 went away here,
yeah,
$60 there, you probably wouldn't notice. They could probably keep that going for a while, right?
Yep.
And so, you know.
Be able to get more long-term.
Right. So the question is where you...
What it means is they have that whenever they need it.
Yeah. It's a question of whether you want a long or short con. And also, it depends on whether it's a debit or a credit card, because debit cards have daily limits.
Hmm.
Whereas if someone jacks your Amex, they'd just be like, ching, ching, new computer. So, anyway. So, I don't know. Nevin, is this going to alter the way that you think about, like, buying electronic goods at all?
I mean, I don't do a lot of purchases over the internet anymore.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think about it. My main internet purchasing is all through Steam.
Uh-huh.
So, in that sense, if someone hacked my Steam account, that would be fucking shitty.
Yeah.
But so far, so good. I bought my computer from Amazon. And I have Amazon accounts, but I never actually used them.
I would say that at least 50% of my purchases, if not more, go through Amazon.
Yeah. I mean, you're always at risk.
Yeah.
Put it this way. If you have a wallet on you,
you're
at risk. Someone could mug you and take your money and take your ID and take your fucking all of your shit, your dental card, you know, your AAA card. And you know, you're always at risk. The question is what is comfortable. And you know, usually, unless someone is going to go after you and decides that you're a good target, you're never going to, even if you're vulnerable, no one's going to bother. So that's like, that is my level of concern, is how do I avoid not being the mark versus how exposed am I? And that usually means just don't buy a shit ton of shit, don't have a shit ton of credit cards, you know, and do as much as you can in cash, I guess. But I don't know.
That was a cash-only kind of a guy. I'm
definitely not. Credit cards are really good right now.
Yeah.
When I pay down my credit card debt and finally get fucking fully paid, and if I get fully paid, credit debt all goes away, and then it's back to cash because it's easy.
John,
you can't fuck it up.
John, how do you feel about this?
I just keep gold under my bed.
Yeah, right. That'd be awesome. I want a gold brick.
Yeah. John Kleinbell only deals in gold doubloons. So next time you're going to hire him to do a show, just keep that in mind. You got to go to the bank, take out some gold.
You can pay with whatever you want. I'm just going to turn it into gold. Whatever you pay.
Cash for gold?
Yeah, cash for gold.
I prefer silver. If I really, I don't, gold's a little too gaudy for me, but bricks of silver?
Gold and platinum.
Platinum?
Yeah. Precious stones.
I like to transfer all my money into illegal drugs, because the value of that's only going up.
If you think about it.
Until they legalize it, and then you're fucked.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Then it's a buyer's market.
Drugs have like a, you know, they go bad after a while. Yeah, maybe. You need to sell them every once in a while.
Yeah. But, you know, I need cash every now and then, so it works out perfectly.
Pretty good.
You know, here's a brick of heroin. Yeah. I'd like a pizza, please.
Platinum and gold, to my knowledge, and guns are all legal.
Yeah.
Guns? Actually, you know what?
Actually, guns are not legal.
I might switch from gold to guns.
Well, yeah. just understand, you are not allowed to trade in firearms unless you're an authorized, you're like a licensed dealer.
So you go to one of those cop things where they're like, toys for guns.
Yeah, you can do that. You can turn in guns for tax credits.
do you remember the Peace Angel?
Yeah. I was supposed to be the guy who would melt it down and turn it back into guns.
Yes.
Which really isn't me.
So we had this statue at our high school called the Peace Angel. Like some like concept artist had done it. She'd melted down like a bunch of guns and like sculpted an angel out of it, right? To encourage world peace or whatever. But it was like the most horrific, like ugly looking like piece of shit sculpture you've ever seen in your life. Right? And for a while, I was telling Nevin that he needed to just like, we would steal the statue in the middle of the night, and he would melt it down and then turn it all into, like, a super gun.
But I had no interest in doing that, because I don't like guns. I like guns in games. I don't like guns in real life.
What if we just...
Wait, so, like, if the zombie apocalypse does come on us...
Well,
like,
then guns are good.
Will you be ready to actually pull the trigger?
That's when he has, like, super crowbar.
I would totally shoot zombies, but I really don't want guns in my house right now.
What if we just melted it down and turned it into the world's largest, like, non-firing gun?
No, I really like real guns.
what if we melted it down and turned it into the world's largest gun, but no one makes bullets that are big enough to pin to it?
I just don't want
to
do that.
If someone were to create a bullet, it would actually fire.
It's just not exciting to me. What's exciting to me
really
is...
world's largest gun?
No, not even. I like real shit. Remember, Modern Warfare 3, not real enough. Battlefield 3, better, because it's more real.
All right. Well, on that crazy note, let's take a break. And then we'll come back on the flip side with some video game talk.
Again.
This time reviews. Yay, Nevin. And we're back from the break.
Oh,
that was exciting. We saw some machine guns.
Yep.
Saw Britney Spears get covered in poo.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Definitely not, you know, actual poo.
People don't shit blue.
Usually. People definitely pee blue.
What?
I have never
You never heard of this?
Before. When have you urinated blue?
I haven't, but it's actually King George III. You know that you ever hear the man is the King George?
Uh-huh.
Okay, so one of the things that the British royal family has is a hereditary madness, strand of madness. And I forget what it's called, but it's basically a genetic abnormality. And the way that you can tell you have it is you're not just going crazy, but you pee blue. And King George III, this is famous, it's really well documented, peed blue. And people are like, what the fuck is up with the king? He's going crazy and he's peeing blue. And he really was going crazy.
How does the public know that he's peeing blue? Because
it was common. It was like doctors were trying to figure out what was wrong with the king. And his son eventually basically put him to pasture. And he didn't become king, but he basically took over the government because he was going crazy. And one of the things they talked about was his urine being blue.
I think that's just propaganda that the son used to take over the government.
It's...
I mean, I don't doubt the veracity of your story.
Let's go to the internet.
I just don't think it's an actual condition.
Blue pee? Yeah, I don't
know. It definitely is true. Let's look it up.
The story itself is true. I don't doubt that. I just doubt the veracity of the fact that...
Maybe the guy was so crazy he thought his pee was blue.
Nope. His doctors were definitely like, it's... His water is blue.
All right. We're gonna use internet to sell this...
Blue pee. Just Googling it. I'm just going to Google up.
Yahoo pee. Answers. I have blue pee. Is that bad?
I have blue pee! Am I pregnant? My pee is blue. No, you're crazy.
How to get blue pee. If you drink this, it'll turn methyl blue. Methylene blue. If you drink this, it'll turn your pee blue. I really hate to tell people this, but the second hit on Google, if you look up blue pee, the first one is Yahoo Answers, I have blue pee, is that bad? The second one...
How to?
...is blue pee... Free porn sex movies and porn XXX pictures. And the four categories of movies that apparently it offers, according to Google, are peeing movies, MILF pictures, grandma pics, and upskirt pics.
Okay, so there are several medical reasons why a person would pee blue. Blue or green urine may be caused by blue dye. Amitriptyline, endomethacin, all these other fucking chemicals can also lead to a blue-green tint to the urine. An inherited form of high calcium can result in blue urine, which has lent this disease the nickname blue diaper syndrome. And a blue pigment can also be produced by infection from the bacteria something, 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 something.
So if you drink that Windex-colored Kool-Aid, then...
Yeah.
You can definitely turn your own pee blue, but there's also hereditary genetic disorder, which makes you pee blue.
But you cannot turn your poo blue.
Probably, definitely can turn it blue. Yes, absolutely can do that. But that's probably much easier.
Did you get that from Teen Health FX?
I did.
I don't know if that's a reputable website.
All right. All right, George the Third, blue.
There's also, I also found one that said...
I have a website that pops up, blue urine, that pee blue,
was in the... Is that from wrongdiagnosis.com?
We'll find out.
I didn't actually make up that website. That's a real website.
Madness of King George may have been his doctor's fault.
Boston.com.
Did a former king... Wiki Answers is another one, but I'm going to Boston.com.
All right.
Well, you're going to go Boston.com or go somewhere else?
All right. Let's see. A mother and son team of psychiatrists with a penchant for diagnosing deranged dead celebrities suggested that the king suffered from a hereditary disorder called porphyria. The diagnosis stuck, and the British king's legacy brought fame to the rare metabolic disease, though it remained hotly contested.
Yeah, there's one other one that another place talks about that. Definitely his pee was blue. Put it this way. Everybody knows the King of England in 1812 peed blue. So that absolutely happened. And then the debate is why. Maybe it was Horse Thor.
Yeah, maybe it was Space Horse.
Space Horse! All right. Well, enough about blue pee. Nevin, talk to me about Brink. Tell me about Brink.
Brink's okay.
You bought it despite many, many negative reviews on the internet.
But there are also some that were really positive. And it's one of those where I like games that have potential and get patched into really good condition.
Uh-huh.
The question is, will they actually get the patches to take them there? So like one of those is Hearts of Iron 3 and Hearts of Iron 2 and Hearts of Iron 1. All those games took like 5 revisions, major, major patches to get them to the point where they were fantastic games. And Brink may be that kind of a game. Brink has a lot of bugs.
Okay, well...
I would not recommend it right now.
Tell us the basic setup of Brink. What kind of a game is it?
Brink is a parkour action first-person shooter.
Okay.
With a role-playing element in the sense that you can level up and unlock skills and new weapons and updates to all sorts of shit. It's class-based as well, and it's got a lot of variety inside of it, and it's interesting in that sense. It reminds me of like really, really early Unreal Tournament without the RPG element. Okay. It's all objective-based gameplay, so you're all about trying to take this place and plant a bomb or hack a computer or put a minigun or repair a vehicle or escort a person. And it's all because of that, the gameplay is very constant and intense. So that's cool.
Okay.
But the game itself is actually unremarkable.
Are there specific classes that you have to play?
Sure. Engineer, medic, soldier, and like an espionage guy. But it's all of that shit needs more thinking. They probably needed another year of like serious gameplay tweaking.
Okay, how does it compare to something like Team Fortress or even the Battlefield series?
I've never played Team Fortress.
Okay.
But compared to Battlefield, it's completely inferior. The one thing that I want in every one of my games from now on is parkour. The system they have for parkour is fantastic. But the actual combat is boring, and the difference between the guns is really insignificant. Again, any game where you don't have one shot, one kill, the difference between guns become immaterial to me because there's really no reason to pick that gun versus that gun other than cosmetic. Because the actual point difference in damage is just doesn't seem to matter in a health-based game. It just doesn't seem to be relevant. So, I don't know, the parkour is amazing. The ability to jump. Basically, you can run around any map, and you hold down a button, and as you run around that map, if you can jump over something, you'll vault over it. If you can climb something, you'll climb and vault over it. You can jump off walls. All of it just is automatic, and it makes it really effortless to navigate.
Are the stages built in a way that kind of encourages that movement?
Yep. I mean, if you take there's three body types, you take the heavy body type, you're not going to do much of anything.
Uh-huh.
If you take the light body type, you do really fun, impressive jumping shit. It clearly needed more of that, more dedication in the map design to make that important. Because the one thing they've fucked up in their map design is because it's objective based, it's consistently choke point.
Uh-huh.
Like you constantly run to places where, so the defending side just holds up.
Right.
And pours down grenades and fire, and the attacking side just runs up and dies a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't seem to be, because I love objective-based games, why I like, one of the big reasons I like Darkest Hour and Red Orchestra is you have to take objectives, so the gameplay is driven. It's not just running around on a giant map shooting people, it's running around on a giant map trying to get to objectives to win the game. And that map has, those maps have multiple options and multiple objectives, all of which are relevant. In this game, pretty much every objective, there's only one that's important. And then there's other ones that you can do.
So everyone just kind of holes up around that one objective. And
yeah. The game ends up becoming very plodding.
So does
for all that movement and opportunity to do creative motion, ultimately you end up just running at each other head to head over and over and over.
So it kind of ends up becoming like the first half of a Capture the Flag game, right?
It is
like,
Capture the Flag.
So every single multiplayer instance is like a Capture the Flag.
There's an objective in every, like either with the exception of the escort missions, which end up being the same. They're just a mobile Capture the Flag, and only one side can cap them.
Uh-huh.
Most of the maps are like, okay, we have to first get to this door and blow it up. And then once you get to the door, we have to go repair an object that opens up a new pathway.
Uh-huh.
Each objective we complete unlocks more time to finish the map versus the defenders, who their whole point is to make us run out of time and stop us. Okay, easy enough. Because most of the maps have maybe two ways to get to an objective.
Uh-huh.
You pretty much just end up the same thing happening over and over again.
And
defense is way more fun than offense because you basically like, all right, we're gonna camp, we're gonna set up our miniguns, we're gonna like, because you can buff your teammates, we're gonna give you all extra ammo and extra health and extra armor and damage buffs, and then the bad guys run in and you're like, all dead. All right, let's loot them. And then you do it again. And it, there's just no, like, I don't know. It's not, that shit wasn't thought out very well.
Yeah.
Or played out very well. I don't know. I don't know what it is. But
how is it playing with the online community? Are people very...
There's people playing, but you don't communicate with anybody, so there's no... There's voice chat. I have voice chat on my thing.
But no one has headsets?
People have headsets, but no one... No point. There's no... Because there's no setup between the time... The maps are so small, there's basically like just run out, fight, die, run out, fight, die, run out, fight, die. And that's the same game.
You can't use like the... There's not like a class where like, okay, I can be the medic and then... Yeah. It's like in Team Fortress, you get the heavy, right? Like the heavy gunner, and then someone play medic and run behind the heavy gunner with the healing ray on the full time.
Sure. Right.
And then everyone is dumb, so they'd be focused on the heavy. They'd be shooting him, but because he's getting constantly healed, he would just mow down the opposition. Right? Until people got smart to that strategy and people actually started focusing on the medic.
Sure.
But
there's none of this going on. Because each class... are effectively at the end of the day swappable.
Uh-huh.
They all have special abilities, none of which are significantly game changing. The medic doesn't really heal you. The medic can give you one more health pip, and that takes a certain amount of like energy, which recharges.
Uh-huh.
It can also revive people who have been knocked down.
Uh-huh.
There's no killing out. You shoot a guy in the head, he just loses health faster, which is my like cardinal fuck you rule. No, shoot a guy in the head, he dies.
Right,
can't heal him, he's gone. Because it's a health-based system, he gets knocked down, he's like, oh, help me, on the ground. And the medic comes over, throws him something, and that player can then revive himself.
Uh-huh.
Not a terrible idea. I mean, Battlefield 2 had that, where there was a medic character that ran around with CPR pads.
Right, right.
And you could run up, you could, one, kill people with them.
Yeah, that was the best. Sneak up behind someone, and you're like...
And you kill them.
Yeah. Or the drill, the engineer and his drill, that was also awesome.
But, you know, like, the players... Anyway, whatever. This game is not as well thought out as it should be.
Okay.
I don't know why I keep feeling like it's very French. It feels very French.
Is it because there's parkour in it?
The parkour in it's pretty awesome, though. That's the best part. I don't know. You know, like, all the guns are all classes can use all the same guns, although the heavier your body type, the heavier the guns you can have.
Uh-huh.
So you can have, like, grenade launchers and shit if you're the heavy body type, and you can't if you're the light body type.
Right.
And that's about the only limitation, which I like, but there's no significant difference between any of the... There's rate of fire differences and damage mm-hmm. differences, but at the end of the day, you know, any gun with a high rate of fire and a moderate amount of damage is replaceable by any gun with a high rate of fire and a moderate amount of damage, and they all perform the same.
So there's no... Like even in GoldenEye, though, there's, like, a distinct advantage to having, like, a grenade launcher over an M16,
and
right?
The MP5 had a different shot pattern compared to... A distinctively different shot pattern compared to the other guns and the Club.
Yeah.
And you'd be like, this game, well, yes, that is in there. None of it really manifests in the gameplay.
Okay.
This, you know, it's fun, but I stopped playing it already, which is annoying because I really wanted to keep playing it.
You paid like full retail for that.
I did. I paid slightly less than full retail. And I wanted a game that was more fast-paced. I was burned out on driving around for 5 minutes in a tank to get blown up. So I wanted a game that had that fast-paced gameplay. And the thing I liked about Brink was like, fuck, the world looks great. Uh-huh. The character designs are great. And the movement is fantastic. And the problem is it's a buggy game. So there's a lot of, like, it's slower than it should be.
Yeah, they had a release date patch for
it. There's a new patch out already that's supposed to be a performance patch. So that could be good. But
from what you're telling me, it sounds like unless they actually, like, somehow fully revise the gameplay itself or somehow, like, revise the maps, I mean, it's not going to really address... Performance patches aren't going to address your complaints.
Performance patches would help because a lot of what's going on is because the game is harder. I mean, I got a brand new computer with it's not a top tier video gaming computer, but it's a good video game computer. And I it's just slow.
Yeah.
It's just not quite right. It's okay, but it's just not quite right.
Chugs along every now
compared
and then.
Compared to all the other shooters I own, it's not even...
Well, I mean, how can you tell if Red Orchestra is running slow?
Red Orchestra runs super fast.
I know, I'm just joking.
On my computer.
That drive took 5 minutes and 30 seconds instead of just 5 minutes.
But when I get up close and I start running around and jump out of my tank and I chase you down, I shoot my pistol at you and the lens flare is beautiful and the color palette is amazing. I mean, it's like a fucking painting in that game now because I can max that shit out. I like retro gaming now. I like old engines being used to create new games. I'm looking for more of those games.
Yeah, well, you know what I realize is kind of interesting about Modern Warfare 3? So the Modern Warfare 3 engine... Okay, Modern Warfare 2 engine and the Black Ops engine both diverged off the Modern Warfare 1 engine. And I imagine Modern Warfare 3 is probably going to be a further evolution of the Modern Warfare 2.
Mm.
Like that path rather than the Black Ops path. Because it's still being developed by Infinity Ward, even though kind of like the principles of that company have left.
Okay.
But at the core of both of those, I think is... I want to say... like the Quake engine.
Maybe.
Like, the core like, dev kit on both those is, like, super old. It's kind of crazy, like, how nice they look, all things considered.
But that's because it's like taking a car engine.
Right.
Like, weirdly, if you look at all, like, World War II, my favorite reference, tanks, airplanes, bombers, cars would use, like, the same basic engine. And it's because when you build a good engine and it works really well, it's much easier to build something around that engine.
Right.
That take advantage of it rather than building new engines. And so you got a game like Brink, brand new engine, clearly not optimized.
Yeah.
And a game like my Darkest Hour games or at Orchestra, their Unreal engines are so fucking done that all they're doing is tweaking great... They're basically putting a shell on top of
the
great engine.
That's why, like, especially in the console world, you get your best games towards the end of the console's life cycle because people have kind of started to figure out the tricks of the architecture and how to buffer it a little bit more smartly and things like that.
So I'm really excited about all that shit. I like that kind of gaming. I like that Red Orchestra 2 is coming out, and I'm like, I wonder what that's going to be like. That could be really cool.
My guess is really buggy at the beginning, but they'll offer a shit ton of free patches.
Built on an established engine, though.
Yeah.
And that's what's interesting is they...
Well, I mean, what can
10
they
years,
really,
like 8 years later...
What can they really add to Red Orchestra 2 that you haven't seen in the development
I'm
since
sure there's
Red
a lot
Orchestra
of map
1?
Shit. Like, a lot of details to the world that you can play in.
Because those trees look pretty shitty, I'll be honest with you.
Sure. But what you do is you go, like, fuck the type of tree design. Because the reason they're shitty is that they have hundreds of trees.
Right.
And the effect is, look at the forest over there that you can go through. I'm sure what they're going to do is, like, bullet penetration. which they have none.
Oh, so like when you shoot through, like a shoot through a house, it'll actually hit somebody.
Shell damaging buildings. Uh-huh. I don't know the change list, but I'd imagine if you shoot shells at buildings, buildings have damage now. I'd imagine that if you shoot at a wooden palisade, bullets go through it and have different effects if they go through.
Uh-huh.
I'm sure a lot of that stuff is going to be done. So an engine that can do more versus engines that have now graphically maximized.
Right.
Because that would be the primary reason. No. That, and probably that, more ground up work towards like body damage and tank damage. And
like specifically, like you can't hold your pistol if you.
They have that right now. Yeah. Where in the version I use, they just did a huge patch and they brought a bunch of new. One of the great things is they give you new vehicles and new guns and new shit like mortars. They've added fucking man portable mortars, so you can actually shell your friends. And it's kind of cool.
You look so happy. It's like a child on Christmas.
It's so joyous. Talk about that. And they went through all the tank code and they rewrote all of it. So when you have different, it's more realistic when a tank gets hit by a piece of, by a different type of shell. Certain shells will penetrate and not necessarily kill somebody. So there's a lot of times where you shoot a tank and it just stays there and the engine's on, but it's the guy who's driving it is dead. And if someone got in that tank and tried to take it over, the driver's thing wouldn't work. Kind of cool.
Because you
put a hole through the fucking... You shot the driver's compartment and destroyed it. So the tank still runs. There's things like you can damage the mantle, which is the tank turret where it spins. And I had the mantle knocked out. And you're like, oh shit, I can't move the turret anymore. And then you die because they hit you again. Or they knock the gun out. They hit the gun. You know, like the gun is gone.
Do you just abandon ship at that point?
You can switch to the machine gun. You can do the bow machine gun.
I would just run out. If I was a driver, I would just jump out.
Often you do.
Leave the guy in the machine gun nest and just start running.
It's so much fun. I love that shit. It's the best moment in that game. Someone's driving that tank and they've driven 5-10 minutes to get 5 minutes to get to a location. And if you're infantry, even better than if you're another tank. If you're another tank, it's satisfying to blow them up. But if you're infantry and that guy is going to pull up to his little spot, he's going to, you know, look around a little bit. He's going to stand up in his tank, stand up on top of the hatch, look around, and you go, pop! And he's dead, and the tank stays there, and that son of a bitch respawns back at spawn, and he's going to have a long drive. And you're like, yeah, perfect. Love that moment. Nothing better than that moment. Anyway.
I can never do that. Because the thing is, that moment is only satisfying to you because you know what it feels like to have it done to you.
Yes,
I can't.
The best maps truly are maps where they have lots of objectives close together over a large map.
So you can have all these little mini... Yeah.
You have constant conflict, and very rarely do you drive for 5 minutes. You want to do like maybe 30 seconds get to position and then engage.
All right.
And actually, most of the maps are timed so that you run out of run right as you get to the next spawn zone. So you can get there, and but if you go fast, you're probably going to get shot.
Yeah.
So it's all about playing a little bit more tactical. Okay. Anyway. All
right. Well, John, we played a little bit of Mortal Kombat yesterday.
Yeah.
How'd you like that? How'd you feel about this Mortal Kombat reboot?
It was fun. Yeah. It was pretty quick to pick up the special moves from all the various characters. It was nice that it had like a menu that you could just go through and instead of having to like
pull out a guide,
glean the information from people who were playing the game in the arcade or like you know.
Was that really the way it used to be? That they didn't tell you what these characters could do?
A lot of the old cabinets like didn't have instructions on them. When Street Fighter and Mortal Kombat started getting popular, they would actually like paste like a little thing underneath the screen that had the little guides.
Sometimes. But they never showed the fatalities or anything.
Yeah, like the fatalities are always a secret. So like if you're at the arcade and some dude pulled out the fatality, everyone would be like, oh shit, how'd you do that? Like you'd be the most popular kid for like a minute.
Alright.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it was fun. Like some of the characters seemed like they were kind of indestructible. Like at least in the matchups, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like I mean, well, you whooped me most of the time, but then there were a couple of times where it's just like
I was hacking.
Like with Katana, where you just,
with
like,
the fans
couldn't
the...
even like
you know
get
what's...
up.
When I fight her in the single player game, because I started the single player like right as you were leaving yesterday, like I still get fucked up by her. Like I'll be blowing through it and then I'll go run into a match with Katana. I'm like, fuck.
Yeah, those fans are.
Yeah, there's something about the pattern that she uses that it's like 100% counter to the way that I usually fight in that game.
So if you ever play Howard,
yeah, pick Katana. Learn her moves and then fight me, and I almost assure you victory. What did you think about like kind of like the new art style and the fatalities and whatnot?
I thought the fatalities were, to be honest, I was a little underwhelmed by them.
Yeah.
Because I thought they could have been a little more creative with it. It seemed like most of the fatalities that I've seen so far have been, like, variations of just, like, cutting somebody's limbs off and then just, like, kicking them away or, like, you know.
Yeah.
That's boring. Like, I see that every day.
I've seen that since, like, I was eight.
Actually, the one fatality. There were some of the x-ray attacks were kind of cool, though.
Yeah. Like, well, what are the x-ray attacks? Explain that for these.
So x-ray attacks are, like, there's some movies. There's some movie that was shot by...
George Clooney.
The Virgin Suicides has this, too, I think, where there's, like, a scene where, like, you see, like, you know, when something gets... You could see, like, the x-ray of, like, you know...
Three Kings did it.
...in there. And then, like, but with this, like, it does, like, basically, there's, like, this... It's a superpower attack that you have to charge up your meter for. And then once your meter's at a certain point, if you land it right and the person isn't defending... It'll initiate kind of this auto sequence where it just does, like, this kind of, like, slow motion where it, like, you know, it'll start with, like, kicking the person in the face, then it'll, like, you know, knee them in the balls, and then you do, like, an elbow down on their back or something like that. And each time you hit them, it does, like, it x-rays in and shows the actual damage done. And there's an awesome, I think Kano's is probably the best one that I saw, like, where, like, he sticks, like, a knife in, like, both of your legs and, like, makes you, like, go down on your two knees, and then I can't remember what he does after that.
He, like, boots you in the face. Yeah but, like, you see the knife, like, go through, like, and, like, split the bone in half.
Like, breaks your bones, and... Yeah.
Which does make it hard to believe that the guy would get up immediately and keep fighting.
Yeah, but it's kind of not the most realistic.
It's part of the fiction.
Again, a Street Fighter where one swipe of the blade killed somebody would be one I would want to play.
They had a game like that. Bushido Blade.
Yeah, that looked really cool.
Bushido Blade was a lot of fun. We used to play that at Chris's house.
I don't think I ever played it.
I
would play that.
I remember that. Wasn't that original PlayStation game?
Yeah, if I can dig up my discs, I have it somewhere.
That game was ridiculous. Yeah, it was basically just a bunch of dancing around.
Yeah, you would be, like, moving around someone for, like, 3 minutes.
Yeah.
And then, like, as the timer was running out, you'd just be like, ah!
You'd have to make a move. I love that.
But there was a guy that had a gun in it. In Bushido Blade 2, they added a character with a gun, and it just, like, fucked it up completely. Because everyone would just pick Gun Guy, and you just be like, all right.
Bam.
There's another one where this is one way back in my recollection, where a guy, it's two samurai,
uh-huh.
and it's that honorable combat where they're basically sitting across from each other, like this far away, uh-huh. from you and me, and they have their swords, and they're waiting. It's one cut.
Yeah, no, it was like, that was like a mini game, Bushido Blade, I think.
That sounds really exciting. To me, hyper-realistic games.
That's the worst. No, you need, super excited. Like, what I love about, like, x-ray attacks is every time you hit it, though, it's, like, a guaranteed at least a third of someone's life going away.
Yeah.
And your super meter builds up more if you're getting the shit kicked out of you.
Mm.
And so it's, like, it's kind of like that last dish, like, maybe I can win this match if I can hit the x-ray attack. But...
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, the fighting system's pretty well balanced. It definitely... gives an advantage to people that know how to use it a little bit, but I mean, I'd say, John, you won like maybe like a third of our matches, considering like it was like considering it was the first time you'd ever touched the game. Like, that's pretty good, I think.
Yeah.
So yeah, after you left, I started playing through the single player a little bit. You saw the opening of it. Nevin, what was your impression of what the world of Mortal Kombat is like based on the single player game?
Everybody fights everybody whenever they for any reason. Like, any reasons that previously were in existence when they were friends now are reasons to fight. And
Nevin, my soda's empty.
Yeah. Fuck you, man. Like, not fuck you, but basically, like, fuck you, I'm not going to get you another soda. Oh, let's fight. It's, like, kind of like that. And it's... And no one gets tired. I mean, for me, I get their whole realism shit always hits me over the head. I'm like, I can't believe this. Johnny Cage is not tired after getting stabbed repeatedly. Like, he's going to have another fight. And how did he not know... How did he get here? And why is he... Oh, well... Anyway, it's
all
right.
I liked when I was playing Johnny Cage. All I wanted to do was like punch people in the balls repeatedly, much to my detriment.
It was an effective strategy. You had the AI do it too. Promptly.
Oh yeah. So the first time I fought Johnny Cage, that was like the one move the AI kept doing over and over.
And they ended up getting you with it.
No, like I ended up beating him, but like for like a one match, it was just like it'd be like nut shot. I'd be like, oh, and then I would come back and like try to hit him and be like nut shot. And so Nevin thought the game was learning from like the way that I had played the character and was trying to ape my moves.
Yeah.
But what it didn't do was do that like flash kick repeatedly, like you and I were doing. So you know, one thing that's cool about the game is that the developer can rebalance it and like tweak it on the fly. So you don't need to download a new patch for it.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so if they see from the community they're like, oh, this one guy's kind of like, he's way nerfed now, or he's way overpowered, they can just go into it and just like, tweak it up.
That's weird.
And then next time, because I think both Xbox Live and PlayStation, they have, it's like a, I want to say
a
it's
persistent
like
a, presence.
There's like a 20 meg cache of stuff that they can fuck around with on a program without actually requiring the user to download a new patch.
Mm.
And so I think they're taking advantage of that. Yeah, I mean, there's so many things that I think Capcom should take a lesson from with this game, with the next Street Fighter. That's one of them, like the constant rebalancing. Mm-hmm. The other thing is just the way that the single player story kind of plays out. Like, I know it's like goofy and it's
but very, it's actually a good story.
Yeah,
like, it keeps you engaged.
Yeah, because you know,
I
mean, normally
it's not a good story, but it's
I mean, for it's an entertaining for a dumb story. Action movie yeah. slash game, like it's an entertaining story.
Yeah, and for some reason, when you explained to me that it was all the Mortal Kombat games or yeah. like some of them at least, it got more interesting.
Yeah, well, because the premise is at the very start of the single player mode, you see like literally every Mortal Kombat character is dead. Like they're split in half. Like people are like there's a vulture eating Sonya's like eyes or some shit. And then you go up to Raiden, and he's about to be killed by, like, the ultimate evil guy, Shao Kahn. And Raiden somehow sends a message back to his past self at the beginning of Mortal Kombat 1. And it's a very cryptic message, and so Raiden's trying to solve this. But as you play through the game, you're going through the plot of Mortal Kombat 1. I just got to Mortal Kombat 2. I think it actually goes through 3. I don't know if it'll hit, like, the later stories. But yeah, it's just the way that it's done. It's very compelling. It gives you a reason to keep playing.
And you play every character.
Yeah, and you play as every character.
Like, I don't think you play in the villains yet, do you? You've not played like the bad people.
I don't think I've used like Kano or those guys yet. Last night I played as Smoke, which is one of the ninjas. And that's when I kind of hit like the first wall on not liking like the single player mode, just because Smoke as a character, I just don't know how to use him. Like I know his moves, but like one of his moves is he turns into a cloud of smoke. And you can either smoke forward or smoke backwards. And I thought at first, like, all right, this is kind of awesome because you can use it to, like, cross up on a guy. So, like, you're at his front and you'll smoke across and then attack from behind. Or maybe you can use it to, like, shift their attacks. No. If you are in smoke mode and someone punches you, you get knocked out of smoke mode and hurt. And you can't
so
block while
meaningless.
You're in smoke. Right.
So you punch smoke. That doesn't
right.
make any sense.
And then I tried crossing over on somebody, but as long as they were still blocking, as long as they're still holding their block, a hit from their back wouldn't affect them. I guess the smarter thing would have been smoke across and do a grab, which is maybe like what I'm supposed to do. But I ended up just using his other powers much more often. But that one, I had like a rough time getting through the first 2 or 3 fights just because I didn't know how to use a character. And that's when I first hit that wall. But I think the other thing the game does in single player mode, and I don't know this for a fact, but if it does it, it's very, very smart. The more you lose, I think your opponents become dumber. Like the AI starts like being... like
easing
eases up a little bit without actually forcing you to change the difficulty level, because there are fights where like the first 2 times I tried it they almost perfected me, like they almost got like no damage, and then the third or fourth time I would just take it like much more easily, and I know I wasn't getting that much better about my strategy in that interim. So but I think it's a smart thing to do because it keeps you engaged. Because if I got stuck fighting one guy, there's actually this one point yesterday where I almost stopped.
Yeah, you're like, I can't beat this.
Yeah, because there's some fights where it's 2-on-1 and you have one energy bar and you have to beat both guys, and you have to do this twice in a row because you have to win 2 matches. I was stuck fighting these 2 guys maybe like 5 or 6 times, and then when I like took a break, like,
you came back up, and you're
came
like,
back, and then I just won it on the next one. So I think the game knows it's like you're getting a little frustrated now. Like, let's move you past this, and then you can experience the rest of the story.
I mean, you could try that out. I wonder if you could try that out. I would probably be a bitch to fucking test it.
Right.
But you could go and play, and you just take a round where you just don't fight.
Yeah, just get the shit kicked out of you.
Next,
and then
next round, don't fight.
Just do like 2 rounds where you get the shit kicked out of you and see. It would have to be one where I try it, legitimately get my ass beat, and then just like... let it kick the shit out of me for 2 rounds, and then try it like on the 3rd or 4th
one. See if it plays any different.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. But overall, I say thumbs up. If you like fighting games, it's worth a try. It's if you have friends that vaguely like fighting games, it's a very easy pick up and play. So if you are interested in Mortal Kombat, I say go for it. But all right, to close out video game talk, let's talk about the Gears of War 3 beta, which was
Howard's happy time. Actually, Howard playing a not a first person shooter, but a shooter and doing well. He got there. He didn't start off doing well.
Well, yeah.
He got there.
So, Gears of War 1, well, it's not just it's a shooter, because I like a lot of shooter games, but I was playing online against people, which, as you know...
That's what I mean by shooter. Yeah, it's not a shooter if you're playing against robots.
Well, how dare you, sir. But as long-time listeners know, I generally don't like playing online with other people, unless I'm playing with my friends. Like, specific friends like I have in the real world.
Sure.
But there's something about the Gears of War world... and the way the game plays, that really gets me.
You're just good at the gameplay. That's why it's fun.
But I got good at it because I just liked it. Because Gears of War 1, like, I struggled with that for a long time before I got really good at it. But there's something about the way the game played. You know what it is? I can pinpoint it exactly. having the chainsaw, which is a one-hit kill.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's the best part.
Yeah. It when I was first playing, it's like when Joanna was first playing. The reason I knew how to teach... Joanna is Nevin's lady friend, for those of you
that... My girlfriend.
She's a lady, Nevin. She's not a girl.
She's my lady and my girlfriend.
Yes.
She's my one and only.
Oh, that's beautiful. Yes. Anyway, so... the reason I told her to play that way is because that's how I first started playing, which was you just run around with the chainsaw on and hope you run into people.
Yeah.
But the thing about it is that it's so visceral and it feels so good just to, like, watch some guy that has, like, a 50 kill streak and he's just, like, sniping people and you just run up behind him and you just jam it straight up his ass and just pull up and you saw him in half. Like, that's satisfying. And the thing about it is that, like, almost anyone can pull that off. The game makes it difficult for you to just kind of, like, do that, like, ad infinitum, because if you get hit while you're running with the chainsaw, there's, like, a recharge period where you have to kind of restart your chainsaw if you get shot, and you're very vulnerable to other attacks. The thing that they changed from Gears of War 1 was, while you were in chainsaw mode, someone could be right next to you and empty a full clip into you, and while you're in the chainsaw animation, you're invincible.
That you can't actually be
killed. But in this new one, you can. But the thing is, if I start chainsawing you and someone shotgun kills me, you still die. Like, my victim still dies, but you're no longer, like, 100% invincible. But having that feature in it made it so that when I played a game, I would at least get, like, 3 or 4 kills each round. And sometimes, like, that would be more than other people because, like, just, you know...
Some people suck.
Right.
Some
people then that kept me invested enough in the game where, like, I want to keep playing. And then I was like, okay, one of these days I'm going to actually have to learn how to use the rest of these weapons so that I can actually compete. And then that's how I learned how to use the other guns. Mm-hmm. And I had to basically repeat that whole process with Gears of War 3, because Gears 1, the shotgun was there, I think. But it wasn't, like, this, like, super weapon. At least when I first started playing it. Like, people hadn't figured out how to game the shotgun.
All the weapons are fairly deadly.
Yeah, but...
They're just coming in and...
Right, but you can take, like a half a clip of a Lancer and then, like, duck behind cover and get okay. Whereas, like, the shotgun, if someone's using it right, it's about 99% of the time a one-shot kill. But in Gears 1, the shotgun wasn't as powerful, and so people weren't really abusing it. Like, you would use it in close quarters, but it took, like, 2 or 3 shots to take someone down with a shotgun, you know, to pump each time. But in Gears 2, the shotgun became, like, much more prevalent, and it became, like, this weird, like, shotgun-wielding game, so I kind of stopped playing then, which is, like, when I jumped off of the Gears multiplayer bandwagon. Mm. But with this beta, A, I was just kind of, like, interested in getting back in the world. B, they switched up the gameplay style so that...
Oh, they have new map types.
Yeah, they have new map types, and then the way that Gears 1 used to work is your squad would go out. Once you died, you were dead.
Which I like.
And all you could do was, like, watch your squad in action.
Really like that gameplay. One life to live is the best.
But
realism.
What they did in 3 is they changed it up so that whenever you would die, your team had, like, a select number of respawns that it could use. And then once you ran out of respawns, after that, if you died, you were out of the game forever. So it changed it up so that if you, like, just had, like, a shitty match at the start, like, you just kind of ran to someone's grenade or whatever at the beginning, it didn't penalize you to have to sit there for, like, another, like, 3 minutes to watch the match play out. You would have at least another chance. At the end of the game, inevitably, like, if you're not one of the last people, you end up watching it.
I like that.
But, I don't know. I like it better. Just it kept me more involved. Because there would be days where, like, I would play Gears, and I would sit in front of the TV for maybe, like, 2 or 3 hours. And the total time that I was running around on the map was, like, maybe 30 minutes. Because I would die first every time. Because I would try the risky maneuver, and then I would get sniped or something. You know, and, like, my teammates wouldn't back me up.
I used to do that a lot.
It just sucks. It sucks because you're like, I've been sitting here for, like, half a day now or whatever, and, like, I barely played this
back
game.
Back in my Ghost Recon days, with clan gaming and Ghost Recon.
Yeah.
Holy fuck, I forgot all about this. We used to take the maps, and then they'd do images over the maps so that we could create our own map zones.
Because
you could go edit the file. So you have a map. If you bring up the map toggle, you could look at where everything was in the map, right? And it shows you over here is this and this, and here's where you are. So we did an overlay of that where you could pick routes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you pre-map out all of the routes. So you could call them going A, I'm going B. Different zones were all mapped out. Different bunkers were all mapped out and named so that you could bring up the map in really quick reference without using grids or anything. Fucking ridiculous. But yeah, we run around for 5 minutes, and then you get shot, and you're like, I didn't even see anybody.
Yeah.
And then you'd wait.
Yeah, so that fucking sucks. I don't like that.
I like that shit.
I don't like that. Nah. But the only thing about this new system is that it actually penalizes better players a little bit, because there are times where, just for whatever stupid reason, the matchmaking would kind of fuck up, and it would give me... It'd be like me versus 5 human beings, and I would have 4 bots on my team.
It's good for you!
Right. So basically what happened is my bots would eat through all of the lives that our team had, like, super quick, and I'd have maybe, like, one or two deaths before, like, I was like, oh, now you're locked out, and you have to watch, like, your robot friends die. Yeah. Well, overall, it's fun. The King of the Hill mode is good, just because that one had infinite respawns. That one is just... You just run out and just try to stop people and then die and then come back right away.
Fuck, I forgot it. That's what one of the things I love about Modern Warfare was your King of the Hill mode.
Yeah.
Back in the day.
And then I like their version of Capture the Flag, which is Capture the Leader.
Capture the Leader. That's actually cool. I mean, it's a good game. Yeah. It's a good game to watch.
Yeah, so John, how Capture the Leader works is every game there is a guy. It's kind of like Protect the President in Dodgeball. There's a guy that's assigned as your leader on your team. And that guy can do everything everyone else can. Run around, shoot, do whatever. Your object is to down the other team's leader and then capture them. Because you can, in the normal game, you can do what's called grabbing a meat shield.
Yeah.
If you shoot someone enough, they'll go down, like they won't die right away. And then you can either execute them or you can grab them as a meat shield. You'll pick them up and hold them in front of you. And people, like, they'll absorb bullets for you for a little bit until their bodies fall apart from being shot. which makes perfect sense. But the other thing is, like, when you're down, if you jam on the A button for long enough, you'll either get back up or a teammate can come and resuscitate you. But anyway, so you down their leader, you pick them up as a meat shield, and then you have to hold them for, like, 30 seconds or something like that. So it's like Capture the Flag, except the flag is like a living, breathing person that can fight back. And so, I don't know, it's fun. Cool. Yeah, and then if like they have your leader and then you get theirs, like the countdown clock freezes on both sides until like someone else like frees up their leader or whatever. But
it's fun.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing about Capture the Leader is that it really fucking sucks if, more than the other modes, if you're the leader and your team doesn't communicate with you, it sucks because you can't do anything because you're afraid to go out and play like risky at all, because if you get captured then you're fucking over your whole team. But if no one's sticking around to, like, help protect you or like free up on you, the best match I played was one where there's one other guy that for once that had a voice like headset, and that guy knew how to play and he was smart, and he and I would always pair up on every single map we went to. And either, like, I would protect him, or he would protect me, or we would split up. Like, I'd be, okay, you're bodyguard for the leader, like, I'm gonna try to get theirs. That was great.
Yeah. Working with other people who communicate and have and actually work with you.
Yeah.
The worst is when you pair up with somebody and the guy just doesn't do fuck all.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, let's go escort that leader. And then he just runs off. And like, what the hell?
Yeah. And there are other people that, because there are certain, like, in-game rewards that you earn for playing the beta that there's some of them that there are, like, two specifically that would transfer over to the retail copy of the game.
Your favorite?
Yeah. Which is awesome. That's why I played it so much. Because that is actually what made me keep playing, because I want to earn these rewards.
You can then use it for the real game.
Right, but then, and then in the course of just overplaying the game to try to earn these things, that's when I kind of got my mojo back on how to play. But I remember Gears 1, man. Oh, I'm so good at that for a little bit.
Gears 1.
This is like my Nevin War story. But
yeah, right?
I remember there was a day when it was like me and B-Downs and our coworker Emily's husband, Tom, and I think one other person. It was either 2-on-1 or 3-on-1, because I had played it way more than both of them. But, like, I was still winning at least half of our matches.
That's fun.
Yeah, it was good.
Oh, shit. I love it.
Just because I knew the maps. I knew where the best weapons were, and I would just, like, hit them with a crossbow, and they'd explode. It's great.
Nothing better than that. Like, fucking, that's like GoldenEye.
Oh, GoldenEye,
GoldenEye days.
Do you remember how much we fucking used to play GoldenEye?
I remember playing that game a lot. You got a different rule set. We used the more realistic rule set, where you had the body armor. It was one shot.
Uh-huh. Oh, the golden gun rules?
And it wasn't golden gun rules. We took everybody's health to zero.
Oh, okay.
So if you ever got hit by anything, you'd die. And then the body armor would give you one hit.
Right.
And that was it.
Yeah, we didn't play like that.
Fucking amazing.
I knew...
Grenade launcher.
Grenade launchers and the sacks.
Yeah.
That was my shit.
That was all...
I knew that map, like, backwards and forwards. If I got a grenade launcher once on that board and you let me kill you, you would never spawn again. Because there's one spot on that stage where literally from there I could bank a grenade to every single spawn location, and I had the timing down where, like, I kill you, run to that spot, and then after that, every single time you turn, like, you awoke, you just woke up in a sea of fire, and you would die. It was amazing.
It's good times. Man, I haven't played that for.
I would blank people like 20 to nothing. It was great.
All right. Well.
Anyway, on that very self-aggrandizing note,
yay.
That's it for this week. John, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you, John.
Thanks for having me out.
All right. We'll see you guys next time.
Peace.
Laters.